Hey, don't turn that dial. Here we are. Oh, sorry. Hi, Al. Beep. Beep. No, you go ahead. Beep.
I didn't think you'd Beep. Notice me. Beep. No, keep going. Beep.
I feel like you can do the intro then this week.
Don't you turn that dial, people.
Don't change it. Welcome to This Week in Mormons for the week of the middle of September. Lovely to have all of you with us. We talk about various wonderful things facing the world of Mormondom. On this week, we have exciting topics like the caffeine movement, anti-Mormon / anti-Muslim stuff. Elder Oaks doesn't want us to stock up on ammunition. Mid-singles are horrible. And why a British man loves Mormonism. So many great
things. He really, really does. Simon loves it.
Simon's a very British name.
It is.
Yeah.
Hello, Simon.
That's not I British. Love you doing accents, by the way. It's usually...
No, you are welcome.
It is usually top-notch stuff. I mean, you can do Soviet.
So
you can do Soviet very well. You are very talented.
The ladies love my accents as well.
But then you try to slip into some kind of British, and it inevitably becomes Australian / German / Latino. I don't understand.
I only have, like, any Italian or French, it always ends up being either gay German or Mexican.
I struggled for a while when I lived in Scotland. I couldn't do my Slavic accent anymore once I could do a Scottish brogue. Like, I did, for some reason, I couldn't do both at the same time. Well, not at the same time. But
it is a hard life, on the same occasion. A lot of people think it's easy. It is not.
Life was hard. I had to live in Scotland. Very difficult for me. Very, very hard. I had to walk everywhere. Very difficult.
Make it stop.
Oh, the hardest thing was getting a bank account. Very difficult.
Make it stop.
Life was not easy. I had to use the
British. You had to get a bank account?
I had to have free health care. Very hard.
I hate my life.
And I don't actually want to knock or get into a healthcare debate, but it was kind of odd when you're an American and you're used to our system. You know, show up, fill out your forms, give them your insurance, blah, blah, blah. And when you go to use it in Britain, you just show up and you just do it and you leave and nothing happens. You're just like, what?
No, I mean, I'll be the first to admit, when somebody gives me something for free, it is surprisingly nice.
Yeah, and you're like, this is interesting. And they're like, well, go down to the pharmacy downstairs. And then they give you all this stuff. And they're like, yeah, it'll be like a dollar or a pound. And you say, okay, thank you. And then I walk out staring at my hands full of drugs, marveling at the hundreds of dollars worth of things that this would be in the States. And I say, these hands.
The hundreds of things.
Anyway, so...
Dollars?
I don't know.
Are those the things you're thinking?
Hundreds
of
dollars worth of prescription drugs that I would buy for like a pound. A pound.
Jeff, I think there's a market there.
Maybe. But we're getting...
You should start selling drugs that you import.
Don't people do that from Canada already?
Put that on your business plan.
All right. I will add that to my various entrepreneurial endeavors. I also illegally import drugs from Great Britain. This sounds terrific.
Yeah, you might word that differently for the resume.
Sorry,
really good.
In a cost-effective way, I cut costs through the getting out of the American system to provide you with the same quality drugs at an affordable price.
I've created comfortable evenings for millions of Americans.
And then I can say I am a job creator.
Yeah, no, that's great.
That'll be a big deal.
I increased revenues for my small business by 10,000%. By adding a new line, new product line to our offer.
And then I will be recognized for my wonderful efforts.
Yeah, you should be.
I like the way this is going.
So, well, that's great.
Anyways,
how was your first week as an engaged man?
Well, it was fine. I mean, like, I miss my woman, but, so in that
You had to say that. You don't really miss her.
No, so in that sense, it sucks. I do, because one of the most difficult things is when you're in this limbo land. It's fine when you have your significant other with you and you just carry on with life. But instead, that there's separation there. And so then here by myself, I'm not like, I want to word this correctly. I don't want to say I'm not like living life to its fullest as one would with a like single person. Because I'm obviously happy with the decisions I'm making. But but I guess you understand what I mean. It's kind of like you kind of remove yourself a bit from the scene and from all the stuff going on, you know, and willfully.
You're
so.
Not as interested in meeting people.
Yeah, willfully so, and for the sake of propriety sometimes and whatever else it may be. But so it's like I don't have that, and it's kind of hard when someone's separate. So you're kind of I'm kind of insular right now, but that's okay. I did have our ward retreat this weekend, which was very fun.
Oh. How was that?
It was good. We were up in the mountains by Camp David, up on the up in Maryland, close to the Pennsylvania border.
And, you were at Camp David?
No, it's close to Camp David. It's in Catoctin Mountain Park, run by the National Park Service. And the actual like code name for Camp David is something like Naval Station Catoctin, whatever. But it's like our camp basically abuts against Camp David. If you take a wrong turn on the road, there will be federal officials that will get mad at you, for example. So, Last year, we had a girl who went in there on accident and took pictures, and they fined her hundreds of dollars and confiscated her camera.
I feel like that's insult to injury. We take your camera, now give us hundreds of
dollars. I might have misspoke. I think they might have taken her camera, deleted the photos, and then returned it to her, I think.
Oh.
But anyways, it was a fun weekend. You know, ward retreat. You hang out. You these ghetto cabins.
That sounds neat, Jeff.
It was fine.
I find nothing wrong.
You get there. People, you know, this time.
Were you over this retreat? Was this kind of your baby?
No. Last year it was, though. Last year I was in charge of this retreat.
So this was much more pleasurable.
This year I just got
you.
Yes and no. I kind of like to be busy doing things.
At the center of attention, you don't say.
But it was still fun. We hung out, campfires, movies. They watched the BYU-Utah game. They streamed it on Saturday night. Someone brought a satellite dish. They got it all hooked up, and everyone...
Someone brought a satellite dish.
They could only set it. It was funny. So we have like a PA system. So they ran all the extension cords out there, projectors, screens, speakers on this lawn. And it was reasonably cold there. Nighttime up there in them Appalachians, and everyone's just bundled up on blankets and stuff watching the BYU game, which I did not really watch very much of because I don't care, but it was very fun.
Well, that's nice.
But
that's
I got neat. To go to Antietam, which was interesting.
I listened to that NPR bit you put up.
Yeah, it was pretty cool because they they called it was a funny one. Typically on the Saturday at these things, they block out maybe 5 hours in the afternoon to do whatever the heck you want. Because there's stuff nearby. You can go to the town of Thurmont nearby or Hagerstown. You can go up to Gettysburg, which is about half an hour away. But they don't ever mention Antietam, which is also about 40 minutes away maybe. And so some of us decided to go there. Then we found out when we were talking about it that it was the 150th anniversary of that battle. So it made it more exciting to go. So there was a reenactment that I got to witness, which was, I'm sorry to say, Al, better than the one we had in Kingston.
Oh, better than Kingston?
Much better than the Kingston battle, I'm afraid, yes. This was Antietam, after all. So
how was it?
It was actually really cool. We showed up when the battle had already started, and instead we pulled in, we kind of moved some cones and pulled it on this dirt road, then parked on some grass, and we were basically behind all of the action and looking across the valley where they had all these stands set up and tents where the bulk of the people were watching it. So instead, we watched it from the backside, right next to all these actors launching, firing cannons and stuff like that. And it was really fun because afterwards, they let us hop over the fence and like hang out with them and take pictures with the stuff and with them. And they told us all about the history of the battle and the life of Civil War reenactors and how they do it and stuff. It was actually a very, very enjoyable little afternoon thing with them. It's pretty cool. They gave me their card and tried to recruit me.
Dude, you should. I feel like you and I would be great at that. We could bring your woman along with us. She could cook and get us apples, and then we could just...
She will make us tinfoil dinners.
We could have her roll our ammunition.
And roll our oats.
Oat rolls?
So much rolling. Anyway, it was cool.
Jeff, we should dedicate a summer of our lives when we're both 33 and wealthy.
Oh, am I going to be wealthy when I'm 33?
Jeff, everyone's wealthy when they're 33.
This is very exciting. So in only 2 years, I will be wealthy. This is exciting news.
You're 31?
Yes. Where have you been?
Also, are you shaving right now? What is that blowing?
That is an air can, and I keep lowering my volume on my microphone so nobody will hear. But there it is. Oh, I dropped water on my keyboard. Leave me alone.
You are a strange soul, Jeff.
You didn't know I was 31? Where's your head?
No, I didn't know that. I was just trying to be...
Anyway, so outrageous. Great. Fun weekend. Went to Sharpsburg, Maryland. Hung out. They had a festival. It was a delightful little time at the retreat. Can't complain. Fun little time.
Well, great.
More importantly, good. How are you, playa?
I am good. I bought a desk, finally.
For your bedroom?
No, I put it in the living room. Oh. I feel like I pay rent here. I deserve half the living room.
But there's three of you.
Well, we can get into specifics, but yes, there's three, but I still deserve half.
Well, one of them does get
size and my loudness.
And one of them has basically the whole basement.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
That's fair. True. That's fair. Okay. So some people like to have desks. So
this is a big step for me. I feel like 3.5, almost 4 years in as an entrepreneur, I've finally got a desk.
You had a desk in Missouri, though. I've seen it.
Yeah, that's true. But it wasn't one I bought. It was like a garage sale.
Right. Is this a nice?
This is the first one I've said I would like to buy.
Like, this is legit? Like, you went to Office Max and bought a desk or what?
There's my desk that I got. I sent it to you. And so I'm all set up being a grown-up entrepreneur. Very excited. Oh. I had to make.
Congratulations. Oh.
I had to pay $800 to, like, change my ticket. I'm going to be back in Missouri for the old grandma's 80th birthday, and that was a day of Delta.
You had to pay $800 to change what ticket? What are you talking about? Are you still coming here next week?
Yeah, I'm in D.C. next week, but I'm in Berlin in October.
Right, I know you're going to Berlin, yeah.
And so, but I had to come back early because my grandma's turning 80, and she didn't tell anybody. And so,
shame on you for not knowing your grandma. Is this Grandma Fish?
Yeah, that's the one.
I like Grandma Fish.
She's a sweetheart.
For those of you who don't know, let's give a little backstory here about Grandma Fish. Okay. Apparently, my father grew up in Salinas, California, and Al was born in Salinas. Al's mom also grew up in Salinas. And so as it turned out when I was visiting the Doan clan in Missouri a few months ago, they all like knew my dad. Weirdest thing ever when I've known Al as long as I have, when he's met my father, all this stuff. And then all of a sudden I come to realize that like your grandma was like in the same ward as my dad and they knew him as a kid. And your mom and my dad were like peers. So weird.
Yeah, they were buddies. I like to think your dad tried to pick up on my mom.
I think he must have, because when I told him, he's like, wait a minute, Al's mom is Jenny Fish? And I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, she was a hottie.
Oh, geez.
My dad's words. So watch out, Ron.
Oh, gosh.
Watch out. I just felt like the genealogy, spirit of Elijah. That was our lesson here on this Mormon-centric show.
So
spirit of the Elijah.
Well, so yeah, you know, good times. We had a,
well, I'm glad.
We had a good time. Anyway, we got Mormon stuff.
I guess we do. I mean, we could talk about that. Maybe.
I did finally take the time to watch the Elder Holland CES broadcast.
How did you feel about it?
I like him. That Elder Holland, he's what a sweetheart. Still, my favorite is the one from. Well, he has two talks that are my favorite. One is like the sexual purity one, where he goes into the why of sexual purity and talks about how, you know, God's very concerned with how people come into the world and how they go out of it. And, you know, I think that's just exceptionally well done and very articulate around a topic that's kind of difficult to understand or discuss sometimes. And then the other one that's my favorite is the one where, you know, he's talking about how he was in Canaryville, Utah, and driving down the road, and he breaks down the three times and then finally comes back. That was one that, like, I'd listen to. Me and my companion on the mission would lay on the floor and just listen to that and be like, oh, it's so true, Elder. We're gonna be fine.
All right,
those are my favorites, but like, he's always been one that connects well with me.
No, you know, I completely favorites. Agree. I've always felt a stronger connection to Elder Holland.
I know you're more of a Quentin L. Cook man.
Oh yeah, me and Quentin. Quentin Holland. Just speaks to me.
He whispers to your soul.
I shouldn't be so crass about it, but yeah, I love Elder Cook. He says wonderful things, but I've always struggled to just kind of connect during his talks for whatever reason. That's my own.
You know who's been trending
thing to
down
figure
for
out,
me?
I guess
Russell Nelson. I used to love him, and now his talks are less and less interesting to me.
Yeah, he's done away with the cardiology analogies, and now it's just
still trending up. Dietrich and
you mean Dieter?
Yeah, I call him Dietrich.
Oh, okay. That's not his name. German. That's like calling me Greg, but that's okay.
Is there a difference?
Shut up.
G. Anyway,
you want your life to end right now, don't you?
So yeah, we got Mormon stuff.
Speaking of apostles, I guess I can go off with this. So Elder Oaks spoke at a some kind of Mormon conference thing at BYU, at the Marriott Center, over the weekend, and he cautioned us. I actually kind of Elder Oaks cautioned. This is from Peggy Fletcher Stack, by the way. Woo! Who you can find on Twitter @ReligionGal. Man, she really took a good one. Anyway.
Is that like Book of Mormon Gal?
I guess, but she's Religion Gal. So Elder Oaks cautioned Mormons against joining or supporting, as he says, quote, right-wing groups with mistakenly apply prophecies about the last days to promote efforts to form paramilitary or other organizations. Such groups could undermine the authority of public officials, Elder Oaks said, in the event of extraordinary emergencies or even in the case of simple disagreement with government policy. They said Latter-day Saints should not substitute their own organizations for the political and military authorities put in place by constitutional government and processes.
How do you feel about that, Jeff?
And he says, after all, at the very end, he said, the LDS's the food storage program is about amassing a year's supply of food and water, Oaks reminded the people, not arms and ammunition.
Huh. How do you feel about that?
Elder Oaks hates the Second Amendment. Bless his heart. No, I'm just kidding. I think it's good. Elder Oaks, I think, has had a reputation as being one of the more conservative apostles. So I actually, for me, I think it carries more weight for that coming from him compared to, I don't know, just one of those wacky liberals like President Faust. I don't know. But I think I'm okay with that. I think it makes sense. We can't. It's an important thing to do because I think we've had all. It's, you see this all the time, these wacky groups that are preaching this and that. And even as Mormons, we get sucked into it. How everything's falling apart, how we'll stand on our own, how the government will turn on us, and all these various things. And he's saying, like, guys, just stock up on your food storage. You know, chill out. How do you feel about it?
I think that it's kind of an important time to make this emphasis. But at the same time, I'm not a gun owner, and
I don't even own a gun.
Let alone enough guns to necessitate a wreck. I like that he's calling out a lot of the fringe groups and just saying, you know what, like they prey on the excitement of like last day prophecies, right? Because there's a lot of them out there that are just like, the end is coming, man. It's like, if not this year, next year, but it is here. And it is close. And like, I mean, there's plenty of stuff that you can look around and just be like, yeah, you know, we could incite some fear with this.
Sure.
I think we could.
Yeah, sure, sure.
At the same time, I like the idea that as LDS people, we're prepared, right? And we for the worst case scenario, if anything bad does happen, we'll be here. I wonder if there's any kind of doctrine, or maybe this is the doctrine around the idea of leading up to the second coming, does the government, will it just stay in place? Is it a, like, do we know, are there any, is there any teachings around that?
I don't understand exactly what you're asking.
Well, so what I'm saying is Elder Oaks is suggesting that government and military authority, political and military authority will be in place all the way through into the second coming. We won't need necessarily weapons, you know, to like defend ourselves or take back our government or revolutionize anything. He's saying, yeah, we're golden, right?
Well, sure. I don't know if he's saying that we're golden. Who knows what'll happen?
He's saying, just have some food. We will cook our way out of this mess.
Well, I think this is the classic case of saying this is not about survival of the most well-armed. I mean, this is about, even if catastrophic things happen, it's about having your food and being prepared, not being able to hold people at gunpoint and fight and kill for your family. You know, I think that's a fair point. I believe that the greatest catastrophes we see are simply because we're not prepared for emergencies, not because we're not able to defend ourselves violently. So I think it makes good points. I mean, how many times do we have, we've seen catastrophic, terrible things happen in the past with genocide, with governments doing awful things. That's happened, obviously. But I think what's far more common are just disasters that cause all sorts of problems. Governments that can't necessarily respond to it, not out of ill will, and people who just aren't prepared to weather the storm a little bit. I think that's a far bigger issue than we see don't take this the wrong way, but a bigger issue than genocides and stuff like that, which unfortunately happen, but I think are more isolated compared to the ongoing struggles we will have with providing for ourselves.
Yeah. Okay. I like it.
That's all. Next story. Go. Done.
Whoa. Jeff, we can't just transition like that.
We have to, Al. You're in a rush today.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
There's no time for segues.
Let's talk about the woes of Mormons that are single and mid.
Also known as mid-singles.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, and I'm not even sure why this is news. Just somebody wrote an article about it. Somebody discovered it.
The funny thing is some people on Huffington Post agree, and they just wrote, is this news? I don't understand.
So there's an award out here. It's called the Mid-Singles Award. It goes from, like, once you're kicked out of the singles ward until it's like 45 or 50, which is weird because at some point, I mean, I'm pretty sure once you turn 45 or 50, mm-hmm. you should not be a mid-single anymore. I don't know. But that seems like a big range. But I guess once you're 30, you've got to date 50-year-olds. So tough break.
31, my friend. 31.
Tough break, all you 31-year-olds.
I'm getting out at just the right time, by the way.
Get dating. But there's a mid-singles ward, and it's like it's huge. It's like 900 people huge.
Which is weird.
Like over 1,000 somewhere.
That's really weird to me. Why don't they break that up into more manageable congregations?
Well, I don't know. Well, and so this is something that a lot of people struggle with out here because what they do is they, like, I don't think that the church officially even acknowledges the existence of this massive body of people.
Uh-huh.
You know, they, like, there's a bishop and his counselors and stuff, but then, like, over 1,000 people will attend this ward.
Here's a question for you real quick. They describe it in the article as a branch, actually. Now, is this a full-fledged unit, or is this one of those deals that might meet only for an hour or two, and like the people, you know, like all the members go to their home wards for their various meetings, but they attend like sacrament meeting just at this branch? Is it one of those deals? Because I've seen that many times.
From what I understand, there's Sunday school as well. Maybe not Priest and Relief Society.
Okay,
I guess they figure once you're over 30. If you're not married, why would you ever stay for priesthood of release? Society?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Why would you want to magnify your
seriously?
Duty?
Absolutely. Seriously.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of a weird, just a weird group of that the church has out here, and I don't think they're really sure what to do with it. So, I mean, just everybody goes. Everybody has. I don't know anybody that's had a good experience at this, and they all dread going, but they treat it as like. Again, kind of the social homework. You know, if you don't go to this, you can't expect the Lord to bless you. And so they show up and go through the motions and then go home. I mean, I don't know why this guy wrote an article about it. He's obviously a little bit maybe frustrated with the situation.
Well, this guy didn't write it, right?
Did he follow a guy around? I don't know.
Like, yeah, this is Jawid Kalim. Followed around this main dude, Steve Reinhardt, who they kind of use as their main case study to explain the mid-single.
And he's just striking out with women, and yeah, that's the way it goes. So
yeah, but here's the thing.
Anyway, in case you didn't know, there's a bunch of mid-single Mormons that get together, and it's a ward that covers like all of Salt Lake.
I know. That amazes me that they have it so huge and they don't break it up. I mean, we were talking before we started recording. Like, we have one mid-singles ward for D.C., but that makes sense to me based on the makeup of the church in this area. You know, that's fine. But somewhere like Utah, it just baffles me that they would just have one this gigantic ward. Split it up, man. You could split that into three wards. Make it more manageable.
Yeah.
Then people might actually meet people, you know? I think when you let it be this big ward, it becomes like a convention, and then it becomes more of the fashion show.
Well, it's like they've gone through 10 years of normal wards, and then they say, well, that didn't work. Screw it. Throw you all in a big bowl and see if you can figure it out, suckers.
I know. And it's a contentious thing, I mean, whether we should have them or not.
Yeah. Well,
it's rough because they get a bad rep at singles wards. And I even see it out here. I hear the Potomac ward in D.C., the people in the YSA wards all kind of roll their eyes, and most of my friends who have turned 31 don't go to it. They just go to family wards because they're all like, dude, that ward is full of weird people, and which is sad, but as I glance in, I'm like, all right, well, there's some like normal ones here, but you have some interesting people here. Yes. Yes.
When the filter is 10 years of a normal singles ward trying to get people married off, then the ones that make it through are either like, I mean, just bad circumstances in their life that left them in the situation they are, or maybe not ideal circumstances, not necessarily bad, or the total goofy goobers that like will never get married, and then they all aggregate in this one big ward. And so you've got your few normals, and then this overwhelming proportion of goofballs.
I know. It's weird. Now, here's the thing, though. Now, we can get off this in a second. But the guy they talk to, Steve, he's 36. He's a lawyer. He's a successful guy by all accounts. But they talk about how in all his time through this scene of post-mission life, he's had like a couple of girlfriends. And he lists the reasons why it hasn't worked out. And I look at these, and I don't want to come off, especially as the recently engaged guy who's suddenly an expert on relationships, because I'm not. But it's like I see this just so much like excuse making. Oh, she's not enough of this. Oh, she's not enough of that. And I think when you get older, you get entrenched in your views like this. I have roommates who go to the mid-singles ward, and I hear this all the time. I joke. I'm like, dude, you've got all these girls spending time with you. Just like lock down on one. I'm not saying you have to marry her, but like get in there and work at it and try to make something happen. You can't just keep lollygagging around. Just take, and I see what they do all the time. They take girls on dates all the time, but just they don't drive it to something to the next level, which is so confusing to me. And this is what I've seen a lot. Anyone who's in a mid-single, correct me if I'm wrong. Well, I mean, I'm a mid-single now. Ugh, frightening. But I'm so glad I'm getting out when I am. Thank you, Danielle. This is perfect timing. Thank you so much, honey. Why are you?
You're that guy now, Jeff. You're that guy.
What? Which guy am I? I'm the one who's leaving? Yes, I am.
Yeah, the one who succeeded.
I'm not the one who succeeded. I'm lucky my bishop's letting me hang out in the YSA ward until we get married, because there's no point in me just going to a mid-singles ward for a few months.
So true.
But the point is, I feel like I see a lot of this, a lot of guys who ask out the women, but that's it. They just go on tons of dates but refuse to take a step to make it happen. And on this, I really put the responsibility on the men. I mean, sure, women, do your job to have your act together, to be attractive, to do all that stuff, but you've just got these guys who just keep making excuses as to why they can't follow through and really pursue a particular woman. I think that's the biggest problem facing it, for whatever, you know, psychosomatic reasons there are. But
that's
absolutely my opinion. I read this and I'm like, dude, you pansy, just suck it up, follow through with someone you're interested in, and see what happens with it. Because
it's easy to say, but like the struggle that I think most people in our situation face is
that the women become homely.
It's the poker table. Like, it's a poker scenario, right? Your job is to leave the poker table when you have the most chips.
Agreed.
But there's always that idea that if I play one more hand, maybe I'll get a little more.
I know, but you've got to get out of that. And I've talked to people about that. I'm not saying I'm an expert, but at a certain point, you have to realize that you can't always be on the lookout for this perfect person to show up on your doorstep. And you have to go with something that works. Obviously, you don't just go after stuff that's just implausible, and work at it and make it happen. I mean, yeah, it's a choice, though.
And
come to that choice.
But I mean, you of anyone can appreciate, you know, the fact that us sitting here and saying, just fix the way you think about dating does very little.
Actually, no, I completely disagree with this, Al. It's been a very interesting year for me personally in that regard.
Really? You've had a coming of age?
No, absolutely. I think I think it's very easy as a natural person. I still have these, natural thoughts and inclinations about, you know, what is perfect and blah, blah, blah. But it's stupid. And I've really come to understand more in the past year how much relationships revolve around all these things that we've been counseled to avoid hanging out, to actually pursue one-on-one time with someone and know them well. That's a huge thing. I've always valued one-on-one time, but I've come to understand it a lot better. And actually making these positive choices that'll bring you to someone. You have to recognize that you're not going to find a perfect spouse. It's just not going to happen. And I think these people who are dizzyingly happy with the person they're with are because they have the maturity enough to look at it and realize they're with someone with faults, but they love them for the right reasons, and they work at it accordingly. I actually think I've changed quite a bit in the past while.
Oh, well, that's so good.
So what I'm saying is it works. I mean,
I was perfect from the get-go.
I know you were, and now you're not perfect. So
I'm on the downward slide.
Anyway, mid-singles, like, don't date. Come on. Come on, people. Fox 13 in Salt Lake City. The BYU caffeine movement fizzles.
Oh, my God.
That we've seen all these petitions going around in the wake of the church sort of okaying caffeinated beverages.
The caffeine moment fizzles.
I really feel like this whole we can drink caffeine thing has been blown way out of proportion. Namely, because I've always felt like, why is this a shocker to anybody? So anyways, there have been movements at BYU to create Facebook groups to do these things, to like petition for their basic human right to have their caffeinated sodas, even though you could just go to the supermarket and buy it yourself. But no, they want to buy the overpriced sodas on campus so that BYU can get its markup. But it's disappeared, though. It's disappeared because of the angry debates that have surrounded these Facebook pages. Here's my favorite quote from one woman who wrote this on a page. She said, quote, if they don't serve caffeinated drinks in the temple, then Heavenly Father obviously doesn't want us to drink them.
That is so true, Jeff. That is so true. Also,
it may seem like
the fact that they don't show the new normal TV show in the temple, that's why we don't.
Yes, like I said, it's like that's very fascinating. There are many things that the Lord does not serve to us in the temple. We don't do baptisms for the dead in a river of chocolate.
Yeah, also, so, you cannot buy whipped cream except for on pies. So whipped cream excepting on pies.
You can't buy whipped cream?
No, no go. Yeah, you also cannot buy frozen orange juice in the temple. Which means the Lord doesn't want it.
Yeah, exactly. I can't take that
also,
and bring my own pitcher.
You cannot buy Indian food in the temple. So no temple serves Indian food.
Are you arguing that the church, therefore, discriminates against the dwellers of the subcontinent?
Yes. I'm saying Heavenly Father does not want...
Heavenly Father does not want Indians to be in the temple.
No, he doesn't want Indian food.
Oh, okay.
He wants Indians to eat like Americans.
Ah, yes, of course, because the church is an American institution. Al, you've hit the nail on the head here. I'm actually on board with this woman. Obviously, if it doesn't happen in the temple, it's not meant to happen anywhere else.
So true.
Like she says after that, it may seem like a small thing, but it is all about obedience to the gospel if we are willing to follow. Because when I read the gospel, there are clear references to the way the Lord does not want us to drink that Coke Zero.
Yeah.
No, I believe it's in Matthew chapter 5, verse 48.
When I read the gospel.
Yeah.
I like
anyway,
that.
So folks, I don't know if Caffeine Gate is totally over or not.
So do you see BYU ever letting it, like ever letting...
Okay, the one thing that does make me curious is since the church has said, you know, what it's said, and then BYU has just said it's been a matter of demand. And so if these people manage to actually establish demand for it and then BYU still refuses to offer it, then it might actually raise some eyebrows. And then I think you have a bit more of a story. But at the same time, you can say that BYU, while part of the church, is also able to make its completely its own decisions. I mean, the honor code goes above and beyond actual gospel standards, right? But it can do that. So, you know.
That's true.
I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'll be very curious to see if BYU buckles or if they hold off.
They won't. They won't. Why would they?
Because it'll look bad.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
So, Simon, hello, Simon.
Oh, hello.
Simon Critchley writes writes an article in the New York Times that was shared with us, and actually a really interesting piece. So, he writes about his experience in coming to know about Mormonism, where he had an exchange with some friends and found out they were Mormon. They were very nice people. Uh-huh. He had great debates. He's a kind of a philosopher, theology buff. And so they start having these great theological discussions or debates about like religion and how, you know, Mormonism actually holds up against other religions and things like that. And he shares an experience where he came in and taught at BYU about romanticism and, you know, kind of how, I guess, that creative energy that we associate with romantic poetry, that it typically comes out of a disappointment with a religious or, you know, Christian worldview.
Right.
And so he's talking about how poetry, well, I'm not a huge poetry guy, but supposedly this is his view that, that poetry becomes secular scripture, right? And so those are the things that we cite and that we point to. And he was just talking about how that all comes together. And so he came to BYU and did a week long, I guess, lecture series on all this, right? And he was talking, or he made the assertion that somebody at the end of this said, what you've been telling us this week about romanticism and the death of God, where religion becomes art, is premised on a certain understanding of God, namely that God is unitary and infinite. Would you agree? And he said, sure. At least two of the predicates of the divinity are that he, she, it is unitary and infinite. And yes. Then this guy says, but what if God were plural and finite? And so then he just kind of talks about how he went further on and had deeper discussions with this guy. And he touches on things like the King Follett sermon and different ways that we understand, you know, how God became God and how we, you know, like what our divine potential is. Which was really, like, for me, it was just great to have this article written up and read it and not ever come to a point where I felt offended with how we were being portrayed. I mean, it was all pretty legit. It was weird to see how we would term deep doctrines, just kind of written, put out there in the open. But I don't know. All in all, I thought it was a really refreshing article.
No, I liked it as well. And I think he was pretty spot on. I like it. This is a mainstream, you know, publication going into our deeper doctrines, which I think is great. And the one thing he was a little bit off on is he seemed to suggest that exaltation in godhood was kind of a men's only
club.
Right,
he misunderstood the woman piece.
And I felt that was a little bit off. I think our theology dictates that. That's one of the hardest things. I think we view things like the priesthood between men and women as if the priesthood involves superiority. When I think that a proper view of the gospel will show that the priesthood is just one of many responsibilities and abilities to serve within the church, and that we all have various things, and everything complements one another. That we as men cannot be exalted without women. And I don't mean that to say that we just need to like hitch a ride with a woman and then we can do it. I believe very firmly that the notion of attaining godhood is a joint exercise between men and women. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think he missed the mark a little bit on that. I think some of that might also stem from the temple, and if he doesn't have a full knowledge of the endowment or anything like that, obviously he won't know as much about how the priesthood is much more of a holistic enterprise than I believe he's aware of. But other than that, I thought it was a very enjoyable article. Quite a bit. Actually made me pretty happy. I saw a lot of people sharing it on Facebook, and I was glad to see it.
Now, what's a little bit bizarre about all this is that, I mean, it's doctrine that I think a lot of members of the church have never addressed. You know, they've never talked about. You'll never hear this taught in Sunday school.
Right.
Which I think is one of the difficulties of Mormonism. We'll never, right, is there's a lot of this stuff.
What would never be taught? Just the notion that we can continually progress until to attain godhood. I mean, I feel like we talk about that pretty reasonably openly. I don't think that's a big secret.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I can't think of the last time it was brought up in a Sunday school lesson.
Well, I'll do it this Sunday.
Like
for you.
The King Follett sermon isn't anything groundbreaking, but it's like
that's a little more obscure.
I mean, Joseph Smith in very clear terms talks about, you know, how God became God and where, like, how we all have that opportunity on the same track. Now, what I'm reminded of, I had a Pearl of Great History professor while I was in college at BYU Hawaii that talked about a guy that, you know, he joined the church and then he was sitting at a lesson and this doctrine was kind of brought up, and he was led to understand that we believe in like multiple gods, and you know the fact like even reading this, it can be misunderstood a little bit. We don't believe that there are multiple gods as we view God, right?
Right.
I mean, God is God, and so a lot of the verbiage that's used in this doctrine and understanding this doctrine could be a little bit confusing. Yes, yeah. Jeff.
No, I completely agree with you. So, but good article. Read it. So, if you haven't seen it, share it. I like it. Another great article this week.
Yeah, it was a good article. But like, how do you?
You ready?
I mean, is the drive here? Like, should we have more of this in Sunday school stuff? Are we doing a disservice to our members by not bringing it up, or would we just jack it up if we tried to talk about it?
I don't know. I mean, I'm all for the notion. Obviously, you need to, for someone who's new to the gospel, little bits and pieces to bite off and digest to get a better understanding. But in a situation like gospel doctrine, for example, I don't mind. I think we should more fully embrace many aspects of our theology. I think he described it very well, arguing that that Mormonism is post-Christian, which I think is a fascinating way to look at it. That he viewed that like Islam was just this fascinating relationships, you know, Islam sprouted from a post-Christian world, and that we are now in an evangelical world, post-evangelical, post-Christian, post-Protestant, in a sense. And I thought that was a fascinating way to look at it. That we say Mormons are Christians, but then I often say, but then it makes you look at it like, or is Mormonism the next step? I mean, we're still Christians, obviously, but it's because we have a much more, a much broader, well, broader, a much more complicated theology, I would say. And I think that's a great way to look at it. I don't mind the differences being pointed out because I personally, it's not to knock other Christian faiths. I love all these people, but I don't want to be roped in as just another Christian church. You know, I think there are many distinct beliefs that we hold, and I'm proud of those. I think they're great. Like we often say, other religions have great elements of truth to them, and we always say that. That's one of the great things about the church is we don't just slam these other faiths and
bring
say
bring all that you have.
What?
And let us add to it.
Yeah.
Bring all that you have.
I mean, I've seen in General Conference someone quoted Muhammad a couple of years ago, which I thought was very impressive. We weren't arguing that he was – we've never said on the record if he was inspired or whatever he was, but I like that we see the value in other faith systems. It's important.
True. True that.
And speaking of Muslims, a nice little article here in the Wall Street Journal. We've kind of alluded to this before, but why is it okay to mock one religion but not the other? Muslims, Mormons, and liberals. So, given all the stuff that's been going on...
Who's this guy writing it? Is he an LDS guy?
Is this guy an LDS guy who wrote it?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
I do not know. It's in the... Yeah,
I don't know
either. I have no idea. You can find out. But a lot of fair questions posed here, obviously, in light of what's been going on in the Middle East with the attacks on many embassies because of... a movie that improperly and irreverently discusses Muhammad, which is very inflammatory and upsetting to Muslims. Now, I can understand that. I see both sides of this. I do think that obviously we need to understand the concepts of tolerance, of free speech, and that. And he says in this article how, you know, is it too much to ask in Muslim countries for these people to kind of calm down a little bit? Doesn't think it is. And I'm inclined to agree. I also understand the other side, where I think these are people who might take the propriety of some of aspects of their religious heritage more seriously than ever secularizing Christianity possibly does. You know, I mean, maybe in a perfect world, we would also be very, very, very offended due to stuff. But the point is that we recognize the free speech involved. But he says, why is it okay? For example, Hillary Clinton, who last week was condemning all this stuff about the Muslims, everything that's going on, the innocence of Muslims, how we should not mock them. And yet she attended a performance of the Book of Mormon, for example. Why do we not see... Why is it okay to rip on us, but we have to be tread lightly around the Islamic community? I mean, the easy answer is because...
It really is a double standard.
It is a double standard. I think the easy answer is we're not blowing crap up. But still, I mean, come on.
Jeffrey.
Well, no, I don't say all Muslims are, but Mormons are not taking to the streets and inciting riots or anything like that, even when we're pretty offended by the ways we're depicted and discussed in the media.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is a primary difference. I mean, obviously. I mean, if you have two children and
if we had stockpiled more ammunition, we wouldn't have this problem.
But I need the food storage.
But no. Elder Oak says no.
No guns for you. Food. Food, food, food. I don't know. How do you feel about how do you feel about all this, Al?
I mean, we talked about it. And it clearly is a double standard, but it's one that I don't see going away at all. I just see people as being very selective, and we'll, like, it'll come of age eventually. I mean, it's the same as like a lot of plights we had when I was a kid. It was totally fine to you know, call someone gay or use verbiage like that. And now it's not okay. And it's not okay because society has come to understand that's not a nice way to treat people. And that's just being mean. And I feel like there's a lot of the Mormon stuff that goes on right now where people, I mean, they see it as all in good fun when really, you know, there'll come a time where people understand that what they're doing is being just insensitive and ridiculous.
So. But
they'll stop, hopefully.
And it's funny because this does go back to the other article written by Simon, how he leads off the article talking about how he has all these great liberal friends and how, you know, they talk about Islamophobia, they talk about disrespect to Muslims and to Jews and how we need to be more sensitive about this and that. But then Mormons come up and it's just, you know, open season, right? And that is one of the great ironies in this notion of free speech, of being progressive, of protecting other people, where for some reason we as Mormons are overlooked. Not included in the conversation. And I like that this writer kind of mid-story, well, he writes, you know, He says, after the debut of the Book of Mormon musical, the church itself responded with the statement that we've seen before. The production may attempt to entertain audiences for an evening, but the Book of Mormon as a volume of scripture will change people's lives forever by bringing them closer to Christ. Then he says, that was it. The People's Front for the Liberation of Provo will not be gunning for a theater near you. Is it asking too much of religious and political leaders in Muslim communities to adopt a similar attitude? Perhaps.
Interesting.
Other than that, see. We have a couple quick mentions.
There's a new Mormon ambassador to Iraq. Well, there's a new ambassador to Iraq who happens to be Mormon.
Yep.
And is a BYU grad, Robert S. Beecroft. He was nominated by old Obama. He has not been confirmed yet.
True. Well, he was the ambassador to Jordan from 2008 to 2011. So.
To Jordan.
And a year ago, we also have another BYU RM is the ambassador to Kuwait. It's like we're stocking the Middle East full of Mormon ambassadors. Oh, that's funny.
We love them.
Also
the church.
Oh, go ahead.
Al,
you. It's your time.
Okay. I was going to say the church has reaffirmed their neutrality politically after a well-intentioned, I'm sure, but misguided email from our Nevada friends. Encouraged everybody to go sign up and support Romney.
Yeah, the church was like, they didn't actually encourage people to support Romney. Don't be confused. It was just people in the church who were encouraging members to get out and register and vote, but it so happens they were also involved with like the Romney campaign. They were not saying go vote for Mitt Romney from the pulpit, nothing like that. But which I've sadly though I have seen that said from the pulpit. But the church is reaffirming its stance, just making sure we all remember. We are neutral. And in closing, I saw a great movie this past weekend that if people want to look up, it was made, I think, by the Genesis Group. I'm not sure. But a documentary called Nobody Knows, The Untold Story of Black Mormons. It was put together by Darius Gray, who was one of the founding members of the Genesis Group. And actually, a very, very interesting, quick hour 20-minute kind of documentary about the history of Black Mormons and, of course, things like the priesthood.
Is it on Netflix?
I doubt it is, but let me see here. There is
Hulu Plus?
And the website is the website is blackmormonfilm.com.
They got to go for SEO,
just
Jeff.
Cut to the chase, right?
You've got to go for SEO.
But it was actually pretty entertaining. I would... I'll try to find a copy of it for you somehow, Al. Raised a lot of questions. I saw it with a good group. We had a good discussion afterwards about the history of these things. This is a whole can of worms that we don't need to get into right now. But why things were the way they were with blacks and the priesthood, whether it was ever on the books as an official policy. A lot of fascinating stuff that I'd love to talk about more if we ever had more time. It's pretty interesting.
Sweet.
It really was. I'd encourage people to check it out. It's thought-provoking.
I'll take a look.
That you should.
So,
that'll be it.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us this week. As always, please come talk to us. Comment on our webpage, thisweekinmormons.com. Also, you can send us emails, contact@thisweekinmormons.
Yes. And facebook.com/thisweekinmormons.
It's good.
@TheRealTwim on Twitter. And find us, of course, on Google+.
All very good places to say hello.
All.
We miss you.
It goes up and down.
And we love you.
And around. Circular. All good things.
So true.
That's what I have to say.
All right. Well, have a good week, Jeff. I'm not sure.
Thank you, sir.
I think maybe we have some lag in the conversation here.
A little bit. You often have a weak internet connection.
Just like your mother.
No, well, it depends. She's oftentimes can't get on with her work computer VPN issues. So in that sense, you are correct. Well played. Good man. That's all. Thanks for tuning into This Week in Mormons, everyone. Well, we hope you have had a great experience with us, and we thank you so much for tuning in and hope you will share it with the whole world. Al, have a good week. Be good.
All right. Have a good one, Jeff.
See you, buddy. Thanks for listening to TWIM, folks. We will catch you all on the flip side. Jiggity wiggity higgity woo doo doo doo. TWIM, peace out. If I had one wish, it'd be for you.